Keys, installment 5, Unplugging and Activating, a show for parents. Today, we'll start with an uncritical thinking question. Ooh, how can I give my child a good education? And as a follow-up, a critical thinking question might be, why are so many parents who know their child already isn't getting a good education still asking themselves this first question? My guest today is Laurette Lynn. Her website is unpluggedmom.com. She is also the host of Unplugged Mom Radio. In addition, she is a blogger. She does workshops. She is a mother of three, and she has been doing home education for the better part of the last 10 years. Laurette, how are you doing today?
I am wonderful, Brett. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great, and it is my pleasure. I'm actually very glad that you're here today. As we were talking about before the show, I've been immersed in this Wisconsin situation and a lot of negativity for the better part of the last month, and I needed a break from that to do something a little bit more positive. I think when I first started doing this show, my plan was, okay, well, you know, I'll point out all the things that are wrong with the compulsory school system and, you know, the mainstream approach and mainstream attitudes to education, and then the second half of the show will be about solutions. And I thought I pointed out all the things that were wrong, but then I just kept discovering more and more things that are wrong. So we have a very lopsided archive of talking about problems versus actually presenting solutions. So from what I've learned about you so far, like I said, I'm really glad you're here today with some new suggestions. Actually, this is not an area that we have spent a lot of time on School Sucks.
Well, you know what? You're speaking my language, really, because I found myself going down a similar path. And, you know, you start out and you want to point out, you want to sell your goods, you know, you don't want to try to unsell the other product. So you start out with that kind of momentum and you're thinking, I'm going to talk about, how all the positives of home education and all the, neat things and great things that a family can experience when they embark and they, embrace this concept of free learning and open source learning. And you do find yourself talking a lot about that. At least I do. I find myself talking a great deal about that. But in order to really exemplify why it's so beneficial, it almost becomes necessary to contrast it against what is not working with the system. And once you start doing that, like you said, you know, you can't just say, well, it's this and this and this, because each door you open opens up another door and then another door and another door. And you're saying, oh, okay, you know, there's a lot going on here that we need to deal with. And then every once in a while you have to bring back to, and that's why we support free learning and home education and alternative methods of learning, alternatives to school.
Yeah.
So it's very natural to do that. But as people like you and I that have a mic, it's easy to get caught up going down that road. And we do have to kind of catch ourselves and say, okay, so what's the point?
Right. It really speaks, unfortunately, too, it really speaks to the efficacy of this system that we're criticizing, not with respect to it educating people, but indoctrinating people, because we see the hole that we really have to climb out of to show people what is obvious. I mean, so much of the language that we speak and the ideas that we're putting forward in so many ways seem obvious to us, but we get labeled with these terms like radical and fringe, and even the most polite people will call us alternative, you know, and when we're looking at like, well, alternative, I mean, that's like, you know, kind of a cute way of basically saying that it shouldn't be taken seriously. Like the mainstream is where, you know, that's the serious stuff. So the thread that I've tried to weave through everything that I've done consistently as possible is that learning is natural and schooling is entirely artificial. So your work, your approach
that's
really
right.
Seems to exemplify that idea. Can you talk a little bit about your process of discovery leading up to where you are today and kind of breaking out of that comfort zone that so many people like to stay in? And even though they can see a lot of these problems when they first have children or when they first start looking at the school system or at mainstream society, but they say, I should just really go along to get along. Can you talk about how that worked for you, that change?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I just want to point out that I'm right there with you. And the good news is, Brett, that I think that while it doesn't seem like we're the majority yet, there are so many other people out there that I've met in my journey that feel the same way as you and I do. They might not be as vocal as we are, but they're there. So that's always hopeful. And it does drive me crazy, and it's starting to drive me more and more crazy as time goes by, that when you choose a very natural way of living, you're actually considered alternative. And the process manufactured way of living and learning and growing is actually considered normal.
Right.
It's very, very bizarre. And I'm very much looking forward to the paradigm changing back to the way it should be, and I can see that coming. Now, my personal journey, I'd like to say that I was always kind of a rebel by nature when I was a kid growing up, so that might have something to do with it, but I call it my red pill point, the point at which I took the proverbial red pill. and that was, it was actually shortly after I had my second child, which was back in 2002. And both my husband and I were experiencing pretty serious health issues, and my husband more serious than my own, as a matter of fact, but I wasn't doing too good either. And the doctors had given him prescriptions and basically said, well, you're done, and you just need to take these pills and that's it, and you're just going to be enslaved to medication for the rest of your life now. And he refused to accept that. And he said, no, I'm not okay with this, because he felt that would, they would give him side effects that would require more medication. And he just said, I'm too young for this. There's got to be another way to deal with this. So he started looking into alternative health and holistic health and homeopathic methods. And that's when he discovered a whole new world. And he became very passionate about that, mostly to heal himself. And because I'm his wife and we're a family, I embarked on the journey with him, and I stood to benefit as well. And I was kind of skeptical at first, because, you're just used to that. You're saying, but, the doctor says you have to do what the doctor says. But I was willing to give it a try, and we did. And he was cured of, I'm not going to give too many personal details, but something that was pretty serious and considered by mainstream medicine to be incurable. I experienced tremendous improvements in my health, and that's when we started to think, maybe they don't have all the answers after all. Well, it led to him becoming more passionate about sharing what he learned with more people, and he began to actually profit from it as a side business at first. But in order to improve that, he started doing some research, because he saw himself retiring from the film business where he worked and really going with this new passion that he discovered in his life, because it was something that meant so much to him that he felt that he needed to share it. So in his research, he started to learn more and more and more. And a lot of it at first was about medicine and the medical establishment and the fact that we don't need to be addicted to pharmaceuticals, and we don't need a lot of this manufactured artificial health. And he discovered a lot of problems with the processed foods that we're eating today, and the air quality, and just a lot of things that when you talk about them now, and this was 10 years ago, this was a while ago, and even today, though, when you talk about this stuff, people are like, all right, yeah, you're a health nut, and you're one of those hippie types or whatever, and you're thinking, really? Wow, okay, you really think? But again, I have to remember that I was once there too. I just discovered otherwise. Now, this was a very natural kind of progression, because like I said before, when you open a door, another one opens. The same thing happens on this side. When you start making one discovery after another, it leads to another discovery. And then you keep looking, and that leads to another discovery. Mm-hmm. So within a short period of time, we became these alternative people that were very, very healthy and very much into natural health and wellness. And we stopped seeing doctors regularly and we stopped going down that path. And we started to make very different decisions, even politically and socially. And there was, of course, a lot of things were happening politically, especially we lived in New York City. So there was a lot of very bizarre things happening politically at that time in the early part of this decade, which was 2001, 2002, sure, post 9/11. So there were a lot of decisions that we started to really have to make philosophically about where we stood socially. So we found ourselves to be these people that were living outside of the mainstream. And when my daughter was 3.5 years old, it was just, it seemed like the next natural step to enroll her in school. And I will tell you, I will admit to you that I guess having grown up in New York City where people just don't, a lot of people don't homeschool. There are homeschoolers there, but you don't hear about them. You don't see them. You don't grow up around them. It just doesn't happen. You don't hear about it. I didn't even consider it at first. It wasn't even something that entered my mind. But what I did do was go and visit the school where she would be enrolled. And I asked them questions and it kind of threw them for a loop because I don't think they were used to that. So that was the first thing I did differently that other parents didn't do. They just go to the local public school and they figure, well, it's a good school. You know, they have good funding. We live in a good neighborhood. Let's just sign them up. But I sat down and I said, before we move forward, I want to know what the curriculum is. I want to know who the teachers are. I want to know what she's going to be learning because I was already teaching her at home. And she was 3.5 years old. She was already reading, and I didn't consider her a brilliant genius. It was just natural. Of course I taught her how to read. That I'm her mother. That's what I do. And she was way ahead of where they were at. And their answer to me was, she'll just have to fit in. And I said, well, isn't that going to lead to behavioral problems? She's going to be bored to tears.
Yeah.
And they said, well, she has to learn to adapt. She has to learn to conform with the other children her age. And that blew me away. This woman sat there with a straight face and thought this was a perfectly reasonable statement to make. And I was like, wow, okay, I don't think so. So then I started to check out the private schools and it was really just more of the same. And that's when I said to my husband, oh no, something's not right. And to make a long story short, it was actually an article in a magazine that hit me like a brick from heaven and slapped me across the face and said, this is what you need to do. You need to be home educating. And so I said, all right, well, that's what I'm going to do. And with virtually zero support from my friends, family, and the city that I lived in, I went down that road and I did not enter my child into school. And I decided I was going to do that. And I eventually sought out others. I sought out a very small supportive community of homeschoolers there. And then I just kept going down that road and became so passionate about home education because everything else that's going on, like all the other decisions that we have made alternatively, politically and philosophically and even spiritually, we've changed a lot in our spiritual beliefs since then. I started to realize that people behave this way in our society and people treat natural as alternative and they treat manufactured and fake as normal because they've been trained this way.
Right.
Okay. And when I discovered that, I said, this is the root. This is the root. People are out there all the time trying to prune the leaves and deal with the dead leaves and deal with the dead branches, but nobody's looking at the root. They're just throwing more funding into it. They're saying, well, it's failing, and they're just throwing more money into it so that it could fail even more. But when you start to do the research, then all of a sudden you realize that it's actually not failing. This is very on purpose, and it's very disturbing. And the reason people are walking around thinking that we're strange is because society has been trained this way. And that's why I became so passionate about alternative learning. And I don't like that it's considered alternative, but it is. It's alternative to schooling. And I've become so passionate about it because I really feel that this is where to truly begin to see a change in our society is to change the way we train our children.
Right. And I've done little on my show where I'm actually addressing parents. Most of the dialogue has been directed at young people, people who are in high school or just beyond high school. And, you know, as you're telling your story, towards the end there, when you make this decision, I'm wondering how, even when you were sure that you were doing the right thing, how scary was that, considering that you didn't have support of, you know, all the people that you think when you start espousing alternative beliefs or a philosophy that's out of the mainstream? It's really frustrating when the people that you've always been led to believe will support you the most and support you through thick and thin are usually the people who are most ready to ridicule you or to sort of cast that off as you know, radical or foolish. So was there, as you're first trying to do this, was there like a fear that you had to overcome?
Yeah. I want to say that came a little bit before the decision to home educate, though, because we had made some pretty radical decisions before that concerning our health and especially our political stance, mm-hmm. which I don't know how deeply you want to get into that, but let's just say that we're very liberty-minded. I think that's the safest way to put it. But we had dealt with that already. And then when I announced that, medicine also, that was a big deal because we decided we were going to go the natural and holistic route with medicine. And most of my family, you know, I grew up in a very Italian culture in a very Italian meatballs and spaghetti right. kind of neighborhood. And when you announced that you're a vegetarian, my father nearly disowned me. I mean, it was really, you know... It was quite bizarre, but I guess it was important. So even that caused a wave. And when we announced that we were doing, you know, holistic medicine, that we weren't going to treat our illnesses with what the doctor said, that was more scary. So I was kind of already used to that. So by the time I started letting my friends and family know that we had decided to home educate, I knew what I was in for. And yeah, some of the reactions were pretty violent, some not so bad. I did lose friends, and I always found that interesting because, you know, that's when you can tell who your real friends are, yeah. the ones that stand by you, you know, and accept who you are. But I think what ends up happening is they ask you why you made that decision, and you can't answer that honestly without inadvertently insulting their decision.
Yeah.
And people are very insecure about that. You know, if someone says, why are you home educating? I say, because I think, it's better. And, oh, you think it's better than public school? And I'll say, well, yeah, I think it's better than public school. That's why I decided to do it. I didn't make this decision because I thought it would be neat or trendy. I did it because I thought it was better. And, oh, well, you know, I send my kid to public school. You think you're better than me and you must be a snob. And I'd say, you know, I don't really know how to deal with you right now because you're freaking out. And then, you know, you kind of lose friends that way. But my other people's insecurity is not my job. My job is to do what's right for my family. You know what I mean? And I've been told over the years, you know, sugar wins more flies, honey wins more flies. But, dude, you know, I'm not trying to win flies. I'm trying to tell the truth. I'm a nice girl. I'm a nice person. Anybody that knows me in real life knows that I'm not, you know, a whack or whatever. But if you're going to take that upon yourself, so whatever, you know, what am I going to do? You're asking me a question. I'm telling you the truth. And, yes, I will say unabashedly, Brett, that I absolutely think there is something terribly wrong with the public school system, and children are better than that. I want to give them better than that. They deserve my attention. I'm their mother. And that's another thing. I don't really think it's such an alternative decision anymore because it's become apparent to me that this is a parent's natural job. This is really just part of the responsibility of being a parent is to help your child learn and grow and discover the world. And we have been all trained to believe that we can't do it, that we're incapable of doing it, that we need to send them to some other institution and the government can do it for us. They're literally saying, give us your children because you don't know what you're doing as a parent. So when your child turns 4, give them to us, hand them over to us, and we'll take care of it. And then you end up with a society that looks very much like Anthem from Ayn Rand.
Exactly. The real purpose behind my question of, you know, were you fearful about this is obviously, yeah, we're a little bit apprehensive and uncertain anytime we try something new, especially if it involves, you know, our children. But then that's the real question is that we are basically trained to believe that there are things that we are not capable of doing, whether it be our health, whether it be our own education or our children's education, where we have to defer to these experts. So we have this system of domination and subjugation that's just self-perpetuating. So, yeah, I mean, I think that is an obstacle for a lot of people, aside from all of the, you know, the economic considerations that today we live in a society, in an environment, and in an economy where if there are two parents, both of them feel like they need to be working just to make ends meet. But I think that if people were really compelled, if they really did the research and they really understood how much damage the compulsory institutionalized government system does, that they would make whatever sacrifice was necessary to do the right thing, to do the best thing for their children. But then it comes down to this, I can't, what do I know? How could I do this? So what's a way that people can start trying to work around that? If they are a parent who, you know, are having these doubts, how do you work through that?
You know, it's, I used to spend a lot of time coaching parents that were new to home education, and that was one of the top three questions is, can I teach my child? Am I capable of doing this? And I always found that interesting because that's also a criticism that you get from others that criticize home education. They say, well, you know, you're not smart enough to teach your kid. You just went to public school. And I'm thinking, okay, so, but you want me to send my kid into the same system that produced me who you don't think is smart enough to teach my child. So it's a really strange criticism. It's a really strange paradox. And that's the same thing I would tell parents when I coach them is, even if they went to private school, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, the same thing in a prettier box. It's a prettier package. That's all it is. You know, and I would say the system produced you and you don't think you're intelligent enough to bestow an education or to help your child get an education. And that's something I'll get into later. That's not something that you give to a child. You just help them discover their own education, but you don't feel capable of helping your child learn. So you feel that you want to put them into the same system that produced you, who's too insecure, and you don't feel you're knowledgeable enough to help them. So, you know, once you present it in that way, then people kind of step out of it and they see the forest from outside the tree line and they say, oh, gosh, you're right. That's a strange way of looking at it. And the only reason they feel incapable is because they've been trained themselves, and we've been trained ourselves, Brett, from the time we're in school ourselves, to just believe that you're gonna go through the process. You're gonna go through school for 12 years, and then you're gonna hit 16, and you're gonna start dating, and you're gonna get a driver's license because you're gonna need permission to travel freely, and then you're gonna meet somebody and get married, or you're gonna go to college first, or whatever, and you're gonna get a job, and you're gonna hate it, but that's just, you know, how it is because life sucks, and then you got to pay your taxes, and then you're going to be in debt, and then you're going to retire. So we just accept that that's the way that life is. And part of that process that we've accepted is you have children and you put them back into the system. This is it. This is the wheel that we've accepted. So when someone comes outside of that and says, I don't think you should send your kids to school, it's shocking at first. And one of the main questions is, I don't feel capable of doing this. Even if I am willing to quit my job and make some sacrifices, how do I know I could teach my child? And therein lies the key, and I'll go back to what I said before. We think that because of the way the compulsory system does it, we now think that that's the way to do it. And even though we don't think it's working, we still think that that's the way learning happens. And we think that we have to give our children education. This is something that we have to download into them. And we don't get it. We don't get that that's not the way that true learning happens. And there are even a lot of homeschoolers out there. And I'm choosing to call them homeschoolers, which is something that I don't call myself, because they are replicating the system at home. It's like they know that something's not quite right. They don't want their children involved in that, but they're not quite sure what to do. So they just do what the school does and do it at home. And see, that's, to me, that's not truly really appreciating or really understanding the deeper philosophy of what learning actually is and how it actually happens. Compulsory is not the way to learn. Mandatory, processed, it's not the way to learn. Everybody is different. We're unique. We're human beings. It's natural for us to want to learn. It's natural for us to want to grow. That desire, that curiosity, that intellectual curiosity is something that we're actually born with. It gets processed out of us is what happens. It gets literally schooled out of us. So really, you just need to kind of get out of the way.
Right.
And be there as the parent, as the guide, as a parent, you've been on the earth much longer than your child, so you can help them make decisions, you can make suggestions, you can guide them, you can, you know, protect them and provide them with their basic needs, okay? But there is nothing to do to them besides just helping them discover and learn in the way that's going to work best for them. And that is it right there. That's the whole basis of my work. That's the whole basis of what I talk about. And I specifically use the word unplug because it really does require us to literally unplug our mind from this proverbial matrix that is this processed, artificial, manufactured system and realize that organic is better. Organic food, of course, but an organic way of learning is definitely more beneficial for a human being because we are natural organic human
beings. Right. And, you know, that sentiment of or that counter argument that people will often make where they say, well, if you don't want the school to educate your child, can you educate your child? Really just reveals the passive and powerless attitude that most people have towards education. I was up in Concord, New Hampshire, the capital, where the teachers here have been having rallies, and I wound up talking to a young teacher for about a half an hour after a month-long pursuit, and we had a very pleasant discussion, but her presentation basically made me feel like the attitude of these educators and of most parents and most people who don't even have children is that, you know, children are these inanimate lumps of clay, and the school system, the compulsory school system, is like Prometheus that comes down and animates them into action and into enlightenment. I mean, that's really the attitude that people have, and I think that reveals a sort of a subservience, a powerlessness, and deference to authority and an obedience that mm-hmm. the system itself creates. And then those people mm-hmm. grow up yeah. and they have children and then they develop those attitudes and around it goes.
Yeah. And that's why I say it's very sad, but it's absolutely on purpose because, I've been saying lately, if this system didn't exist, we wouldn't need it. Our dependence on it is completely reliant on the fact that it exists. You understand? So it's a perpetual paradox that we've gotten ourselves locked into. And yes, people are fearful when they first thinking about home education because they feel overwhelmed by the idea of having to replicate what the system does at home because they haven't yet unplugged from the discovery they haven't unplugged and allowed themselves to discover that they don't have to do that. They're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to replicate the system at home. So you're feeling overwhelmed because you think you have to do what they do. You don't have to do what they do. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't do what they do. Get away from it. And, that's the problem that I have with legislation that threatens to regulate and restrict home education. You know, because it's the state's way of saying, well, you know, you think you're living outside the box, but we still want to get our claws on you and we still want to get our hooks on you and regulate how you're teaching your kids. No, that defeats the whole purpose. We don't want to do it your way, you know, because it's narrow. It's narrow and it's focused. There's some elite board of bureaucrats somewhere with very deep corporate interests and political interests that are choosing what our children are going to learn and how they're going to learn it. And how the teachers are going to teach it. And I don't want them deciding for my child. I want me and my husband deciding for our children how they're going to learn. And I want my child to be the one to learn and how they're going to learn it. Because they're human beings. They're not, like you say, malleable little lumps of clay. That was an awesome metaphor. I loved that.
Thanks.
I enjoyed that.
It's interesting, too, that I was, I was talking to this teacher the other day. And she was confused, and she was really unable to give a good solid reason why people at the federal or even the State Department of Education are telling her how to do her job. She teaches kindergarten. I assume she went into that position with the best of intentions. But when she found herself unable to answer questions about why these faceless bureaucrats are regulating how she should teach when this is a person you're giving her the benefit of the doubt following her passion, and she couldn't answer that. Her argument of last resort was simply, well, that's a federal law. I mean, so you see that mm-hmm. you know, if that's the attitude of teachers, that certainly translates to students. And I think you and I are definitely on the same page. We're all over the same page as far as these innate abilities of human beings, the all of the tools for learning, the curiosity, the creativity, the individuality, the optimism. But as a parent, and this is something, like, again, that I've really addressed on the show, you've used this term active parenting. How mm-hmm. would you say a parent can best support all of this? What is active parenting?
It's being involved in your child's life and taking an active role as opposed to a passive role. And I think that what has happened in our society, and I do think that the last 100 years of having been schooled is the culprit and the reason why this has happened in our society, is parents have become very passive. And it happens almost from the very beginning when a mother becomes pregnant and she's very excited about being pregnant, but the first thing you do when you become pregnant, and I'm just talking about the mainstream. There are plenty of us, quote-unquote, alternative moms out there that do things differently. But for the most part, the mainstream parent gets pregnant and immediately starts looking for an OB and a gynecologist and medical intervention, okay? And we have our baby in a hospital. Why? Because we just think that that's what everybody else does. We have to have our baby in a hospital, and we don't really realize that we're not sick. Pregnancy is not a sickness. It's not a disease. It's not a medical condition. But anyone that wants to birth your child naturally at home is considered alternative and strange and weird and told that they're taking unnecessary risks and blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing that happens is we have the toddlers and we think, oh my gosh, the poor mother has postpartum depression and, you know, she needs time away from her kids and we need to put the toddler in a carrier or hire a nanny or let mom have me time. And it's this separation and, you know, make sure they're in a crib or a bassinet and, you know, don't let them sleep with you. And like I said, I'm talking for the most part here. There are many, many more moms and parents that are making different decisions, and I'm very happy to see that. But let's focus on what's happening in the mainstream passive society. And then they become 3 or 4 years old and they automatically put them in school. And how many times do you hear conversations where moms say, oh, I can't wait for school to start. These kids are driving me crazy. And I can't wait to get rid of these kids. They're driving me crazy. You're all weekend. Oh, where's Monday? Get, you know, and this is what happens. They want somebody else to do it. They want to leave the kid with a babysitter. They want to leave the kid in the crib with the little intercom thing. So they have the intercom instead of the child with them. And they want to be separated. It's passive. It's passive parenting. It's not active parenting. It's not actively being involved. They think they're involved because they're looking over their homework when they come home from school. But this kid, for the majority of their time, is with these people in this building. Okay, they're not with their parents. And the parents become so busy. Why? Because they themselves need double incomes now. And they're so busy and they've got so much on their mind and they're so stressed out because they've got so much debt and they've got so much bills and they've got so many things that they need to worry about that the child is secondary or even tertiary or, you know, in some severe cases, even less than that. And it's like, let somebody else handle it. I can't handle this. It's a very passive way of parenting, or just put on the TV, I need some quiet time right now. And then they pretend like it's family TV time. And they're like, oh, I'm spending time with my kid. We're watching the same show together, whatever. You know, passive. Everything's passive. It's not active. Active parenting is actively being involved in everything that's going on with your child. And some parents hear me say that and they say, oh, come on, everything. I got to have my own life. You know what? You became a parent.
Right.
This is it. This is parenting. This is the next 20, 30 years of your life, you know. This is what it's about. This is what you do now. And it's worth it in the end. It's worth it because your child gets to know who you are. And that's another thing I tell people. When you're an active parent, it's not only about getting to know your child. It's about allowing them time to get to know you. Because in your child's eyes, the passive parent is the parent that scolds and makes rules and puts dinner on the table and says, you have to eat what I give you. That's the passive parent. That's who they are in the child's eyes. In the child's eyes, though, an active parent is the parent that they know, the child knows on a personal level. What are my parents' passions? What are their hobbies? Who are they personally? And then all of a sudden you find that you do have time to pursue your own interests and your own careers because your family supports you when they know who you are. Mm. And that's what it's active on both parts. Everybody's very involved with one another, and everybody's very supportive of one another. And when your child needs to make a decision about what they're going to learn and how they're going to learn it, you're taking an active role, and you're actively part of helping them make that decision and pursue the learning and pursue the subject matter that they want to learn more about. And taking an active role in explaining to your child, you know, I think that these things are important. I think it's important for it reflects our family values, or it's important to us, or, you know, it's just things that I found in my life and my experience that have become important to me, and I would really like you to learn them. So let's figure out how we can learn them in a way that suits you. That's taking an active role as a parent, instead of the passive, I don't have time, I'm too busy, just go to school and be done with it. And the separation occurs from very early. Like I said, it occurs almost from birth. When we buy those little baby monitors, we don't even want to be in the same room. And then it continues.
And I've heard you say too, or one of the voices on your show say that, you know, this is a child's introduction to the world, the parent. You know, so people don't understand the impact, the magnification that some very simple and seemingly inconsequential actions on the parent's part, how that can translate to the child and the impact that can have. I think that, you know, we have a system that creates dependence on the system. So people are, in addition to school, they're always looking for places to stick their kids because, you know, be it camp or gymnastics or the babysitter. And these little children who are so in need of love and reciprocity and respect and interaction are growing up, all of those things absent, and really they're just somebody else's liability. You know, so this is, you can't do that. There are rules, because if this goes wrong, we'll get in trouble. So we have just this domination system where children wind up feeling small, incapable, distrustful of their own volition, lacking confidence in their own potency as individuals, as if that's like the normal thing. But the double detriment is there is that as parents push their kids off, do you think – I mean, I don't know, but do you think that leads to, in this figure that is the world for the child, like a lack of trust, a sense of betrayal? Like, I don't want to do this thing. I don't want to go here. I want to be home. I want to be with you. I want to be with dad, and you're putting me with these strangers. Does that get internalized that way? Is that possible?
Yeah. Of course. Of course it's possible. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I don't pretend to be one, but I am a very observant person, and I observe what goes on around me with other parents and what is happening to the world. And based on that, and based on the conversations that I have had with professionals that would consider themselves psychiatrists or, you know, psychiatric professionals, yes, I can say that is more than possible, that it probably indeed does contribute to this rampant insecure and distrustful nature that seems to be plaguing humanity right now. I mean, you know, there really is nothing wrong with a child being involved in extracurricular activities that are outside the home, whether it be soccer or a dancing school or you know, even passive interest to some degree,
sure,
like playing video games or goofing off on the computer or watching TV. There's nothing wrong with these things, but they can't be first of all, they can't replace the parents. They can't be used as babysitters. I don't have time for you, so you need to go join these activities. I don't have time for you, so you need to go do something else. And a lot of times, Brett, the parents aren't actually saying, I don't have time for you. It's not literal. The parent might not even be thinking that on a conscious level. But the fact of the matter is that they're so distracted by their own stresses in their own life that they're looking for ways in which to distract their children so they don't have to deal with it. And yeah, there are a lot of situations where the child is saying, I don't want to join this activity, or I don't want to go to school. I hate it. I did a whole show about school avoidance. This is an actual term now. For a child that is that they don't want to go to school, this has been labeled as a disorder called school avoidance.
Like a DSM? Like it's in the DSM?
Yeah, it's an actual label. It's an actual, you can be diagnosed with a disease or a disorder called school avoidance. And there I found documents all over the internet. There was one 60-page document that's being presented to teachers on how to teachers and school psychiatrists, I'm sorry, on how to deal with children who have been diagnosed with school avoidance. And it starts out with just reminding them that they have to be there and making sure that they show up. In no way, shape, or form does it ever say, okay, let the kids stay home. In fact, in some part of the document, it said absolutely under no circumstances should the parent home educate the child, which just blew my mind. And if it's not handled, then the diagnosis gets bumped up to some other disorder like oppositional disorder, and the child is then medicated. So the child is literally forced against their will into situations that they do not want to be in. And that's what we have to be careful of. The child comes to you and they said, I have a passion for dancing. I'd really like to go to dancing school. Great, go to dancing school. That's not the parent passing them off. That's the parent engaging with them. And, you know, I can't teach my daughter how to dance. I don't know how to dance. Of course, I'm going to take her to dancing school. I throw like a girl. I can't teach my son how to play baseball. So of course, we're going to join Little League. But I'm there. I'm active. I'm involved in it. It's not me passing it off. So it's a state of mind of knowing, are you actively engaged with your child or are you just passing them off to someone else? Now, activities is one thing, but school, you know, I've taken a lot of slack for this before, and I'm sorry if your listeners are going to give you slack for this, but yes, I will say that I do believe that it is passing a child off because it is taking something that should be the parent's responsibility and giving the child to the government and saying, I can't teach my child, you do it. And, you know, I think once parents grasp that and they realize it, they break away from it and they say, no, you know what? You're right. I can do this. This is my kid. My kid is not government property. But hey, it's like you were saying before, it's very on purpose because that's what happens. And we get into this society where we run around waving American flags saying we're free, we're free, we're free. But we're not because we have been trained and indoctrinated to believe that the government is the king. And like that teacher said, she just falls back on the when she doesn't know what else to say. Well, it's federal law. But hey, federal law, that's the law, yeah. Right? That's the king's proclamation. Yeah. So there you go.
It's I've said on the show before, too, is that for a long time, you know, very strict organized forms of religion were used to control people. And, you know, they were punished or not punished, but the threat of hell loomed over them. And you know, as we progressed, you know, as a civilization through the Age of Reason, the all of the things that people, you know, feared about God were just replaced with the state in many ways. Yeah, so it's the same trick. I mean, it's unfortunate that the same trick has been played on people. It's just becoming slightly more sophisticated for thousands of years at this point. And what you just said about school avoidance as a disease, this is something that I've covered on the show before, just so you know, and I'm sure we would see eye to eye on this as well, this nexus between systems of authority and systems of domination with the medical community. And ever since science came along, the dominators, the authoritarians, have always looked for scientific explanations for why they need to do the things that they do. It was the same with the subjugation of women, that, oh, you know, it's all of these genetic differences between men and women. And, you know, they did the same thing with race. There was actually a doctor at one point at the end of slavery that invented a disease called drapetomania, saying that the slaves were mentally ill for wanting to flee the captivity of the plantation where life was so good and there was so much certainty for them. So now we're seeing that replayed with probably the most oppressed group of people in our society, children. But with everything that we've covered here today, I have a question. You know, because so many people are products of this system and they just sort of unfortunately drone their way through life of like, okay, college degree, check, marriage, check, career, check, children, check. So then so they get to a point where, as it's getting easier and easier to do today because of all of the information we have access to, they start learning some of the things that you're talking about. And so they say, oh no, I am in this trap of passive parenting and I've set up a lifestyle, you know, more dependence on the way things are. How would you suggest that people start to work their way out of that trap if they find themselves in it?
You know, Brett, it's never there's never an easy answer to that question, because there really is no easy transition. And like I refer to my own experiences, my red pill moment there, it's always a slow process. It happens over time as you make more and more discoveries and you make more and more decisions. But there usually is that initial moment of clarity where you find yourself wondering, what is going on here? And you realize that everything you think is true may not be. And that first initial moment of clarity, whether you act on it or not right away, is sometimes very, very difficult. And that's, I will say that first red pill is a jagged little pill. It's a tough one to swallow. And that's why I think a lot of people cough it back up and they say, no, I want to just keep going in the same direction I'm going, because it is tough. Even making the realization is tough. Then taking the initial step is overwhelming, because you're faced with this idea now where you think, okay, well, I've discovered this and now I have to change my entire life, and they become very overwhelmed. But that's just the thing. Making the discovery is really the hardest part. You don't have to change your entire life in one fell swoop. Just start with something. Make one decision at a time. The next day, when you wake up in the morning, think about what you're going to do differently that day to try to pull yourself free from the system. Is it going to be the way in which you educate your kids? Is it going to be when your child comes to you and says, I hate this class, I don't want to go? Instead of saying, just do what you're told, sit down and have a conversation. Maybe that's your first step. Maybe it's something that, you know, you feel that you're dependent on medication and it's not helping you. Maybe you'll decide to go through the, I want to say yellow pages, you see how old I am, go on Google and look up a holistic alternative. Maybe that's your first step. All you have to do is put one foot in front of the other. Once you make the first step, doors will fling themselves open before you, literally, and you'll be able to make more decisions after that. But you have to realize that everything is going to now be a decision. A conscious decision. Don't walk compulsively. Make every step a deliberate and decisive step. And that seems so exhausting, but Brett, it's not. Because once you start living this way and you realize that everything you do is a decision, it becomes automatic. And you don't do anything compulsively anymore. Nothing, not even shop. You think about everything that you do and you say, how is this going to benefit my life? Is this going to bring me more truth, or is it going to suppress me? And sometimes you're tired and you just say, whatever, I just want to do this. And that's fine, as long as inside your head you know what you're doing and you know what's going on. There are plenty of parents that plenty of my listeners, plenty of my readers, plenty of parents that I, you know, used to coach that have one child that is home educated because they wanted to pull them out of the system and they knew something was wrong. But their other child, you know, for whatever reason, they just weren't ready to do two children, or, you know, I don't know. There could be a bevy of different reasons that they're kind of playing that on the fence thing. That's really a tougher place to be, because you're betraying your own senses there. You know that you want to go in this direction, but you can't. But I consider that like a transition period. And sometimes that's longer for some people than it is for others. So while my official answer to that question is, it's very, very scary and it's very overwhelming, but all you have to do is make one step. The next step is going to come right after that, and the next step's going to come after that, because once you open one door, the rest of them open. I didn't have my red pill moment and then the very next day my entire life changed. It was a process. It took a few years. But what I have found, Brett, and I think you can probably concur because you sound like you're on the same page here, is that there is great freedom in that. There is great freedom in knowledge, and there is great freedom in accepting truth and stepping outside of the paradigm, because then you realize that nobody is in charge of you, that you are truly an independent soul, and you can make your own decisions, and your children belong to you. They are not state property, and that is excruciatingly liberating.
It reminds me again, you know, when I think about my path, and I think a lot of people who've come to similar realizations, it is that story of that character, equality, and then some long number in Anthem, where when the, you know, tiny little book, but when it starts, you know, he's like, so just accepting, even though he knows he's different, even though he knows something, he's very accepting of the decrees of these authorities, And then like 60, 70 pages later, if the book's even that long, he's like, these people are fools, you know? And he has, through his own pursuits and his own individuality, he's developed all of this confidence and self-assurance in his abilities and his mind and his will and his volition. And it is that process. That knowledge is very empowering. I mean, I remember when I was first exposed to a lot of the ideas that I talk to people about today, I would walk away from conversations with, like, you know, the big adults, the past generation, really questioning what I had said, and, you know, oh, maybe I just don't get it, or, you know, maybe they're, you know, this idea of personal freedom and non-aggression, maybe I'm just naive. But those days are over. You know, that was a long time ago. Knowledge was very empowering, and it did bring a whole new level of confidence. And I hate to see so many young people today, I mean, just about all young people, it's more than 90% find themselves in some kind of forced schooling, being stripped of that. And just as a follow-up to what you just said, have you ever talked to parents who say, I just can't? Like, I mean, I think about my brother, who's younger than me, but he's a single parent. He has two children. He is the only source of income providing for them. And, you know, listens to the show and certainly agrees with the ideas, but, like, that's just so far from realistic in his mind. If people, let's say they can't, and we're not going to convince them that, you know, next week or next month you can be doing this, you kind of said, and I just really want to reiterate, that there are steps you can take. There are things you can do. You can be more active. Don't let the fact that somebody else has your children for 35 hours a week allow you to fall into that passive state. But what could they do, I guess, would be the question.
Well, you know, Brett, I've evolved myself, because there was a time where I had this, I have kind of a no excuses personality as it is, but there was a time where I would say, no, I'm sorry, you just have to find a way. And, you know, I would be more than willing to help people find a way, even if it meant changing careers. But as time has gone on and I've met more and more people, I do realize that it's simply not an option for some people, because we have been so indoctrinated into this that we're essentially stuck, and it's just too overwhelming. And sometimes when a person is that overwhelmed, they're frozen. They won't do anything. So there needs to be some kind of other alternative. And I have recently been working pretty closely with, I want to say, a handful of key people within the education field. And some of them, one of them in particular, actually works for the Board of Education, that feel the same way I do. And what we're seeing now is that there needs to be a change. There needs to be more, quote unquote, alternative options for parents and for families, where it's not the compulsory mandatory school system and has nothing to do with the Board of Education. And there needs to be more of these alternative learning centers that support a more open source and organic type of learning that's a little bit more child-led and requires more family participation. So this, when we're talking about education, this is definitely a very reasonable middle ground. Now, a lot of these places do already exist. Depending upon where you live, you can find them. You know, and if they're completely separate from the government system, that's even better. So that's something that I'm trying to encourage more parents to consider, is one of these other alternative education options. If they truly feel that they cannot do the home education thing, then we have these options. But I'm also trying to work with other people in trying to convince society at large to be more accepting of allowing more of these alternative education opportunities to pop up, so that we could see more of them popping up here and there, and we have these choices more available to us. Ultimately, what I fantasize about seeing is the education system completely just imploding in on itself and erecting as a new source of learning that has nothing to do with the compulsory system that we already have, so that, you know, the norm and the mainstream would actually become independent education, but then the option would exist where we would have these cooperative community-based learning centers that weren't this big conglomerate monster that we see now. But until that day that dream is realized, which our grandchildren might be the ones to eventually see, and probably not us, this would be a legitimate option for parents that want to unplug from that and want to pull away from that but aren't really sure what to do. Consider one of these alternative options. And I actually I have some information about some of these options, but I can send you some links, Brett, that you can post on your site, and I can post them on my site as well so people know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
These alternative education centers. And this to me is a viable option and a very legitimate option for parents who don't want to do the compulsory schooling thing, but it's just not, home education is just not something they're ready to do right now. The good news is that there are a lot of people that are unplugging of their own accord and, you know, let's call it going over to the light side and coming out of the dark side. And I can say that with certainty because I have witnessed it in the last 10 years since my own moment of clarity. I have witnessed more and more people coming out of the box and thinking outside of the box and saying, gosh, I don't think something's right. The reason why we're seeing all this talk in the media about school reform is because even if they don't quite get why, they know something's not right. And they know something needs to change. And there are those of us that can say this is the way in which it should change. But even those that aren't quite there yet still recognize that something isn't right. So this is the good news. The good news is that the truth will always win. Even if it does take time and it does take perseverance, the truth will always win. And the right way and the righteous way and the organic way and the natural way will always win out over the artificial. Because it's healthier. It's how we live. It's what we thrive on. We're human and we're craving organic. Yeah. So that's the good news. And that's you know, the note that I can leave you on is the fact that things are looking up.
I agree. And that certainly is a barometer, too, that there is this much discussion about education in the mainstream media. Unfortunately, you know, the politicians and their hand puppets on Fox News and MSNBC, they don't speak our language. So these are people who look out at any problem and all they have is a hammer. So all they see is nails instead of millions of individual human beings. And so that's why it's more money and more laws and more crackdowns and more regulations and nothing that ever gets closer to a solution. But you're right. Even the people who have the most incentive to sweep problems under the carpet are acknowledging the way kids are interacting in school, this bullying. They like to call everything a crisis, but the bullying situation, the United States slipping even by their own bureaucratic metrics for what is a quality education on these mm-hmm. different test scores. And I think people who expose themselves to that rhetoric are reachable. Maybe the mouthpieces and the politicians are not, but so many people are, and they're just, their attention has been diverted in the wrong direction. And I think we just need to work harder to teach them our language. And I certainly think it's possible.
It is possible. It is. Because in the years that I've been doing this, I myself have noticed growth and I've noticed change. And it is, there are times where I feel a little bit overwhelmed and I'm like, oh no, what is happening? But those pass quickly because I do realize that the message does not fall on deaf ears. I've met many, many people doing this that have come out of the woodwork and said, Lorette, I hear you and I agree with you. And you know, Brett, you're one of them. I'm grateful to have met you because I know that you're out there and you're hearing me. But there are many others out there. And when I first came into this awakened, I guess, enlightened point of view, and I started to seek other souls out there that got me, they were out there already saying, here we are, and we're glad that you're here too. So we're multiplying. And you know, like I said, we have no choice but to really multiply because it's human nature, and human nature wants to be healthy and organic and natural. And, you know, that's where we're going. That's where we're heading.
Absolutely. Well, I'm certainly glad that we got together. And like you said, and like I said at the beginning of the show, I was feeling overwhelmed, too. And I thought it would be important to talk to somebody who's doing exciting, positive things, and I feel much better now. And this is one of the most exciting and enjoyable conversations that I've had in a long time on the show, Lorette. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. I certainly see us working together more in the future, and definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely, Brett. I actually had a really, really good time doing this. I felt that we have a great dynamic, and I'm very happy that you invited me to be on. I'm really glad to have connected with you. So thank you very much for the opportunity.